Hello, everyone, and welcome to our continuing Oscar series here on The Cinephiles, where we talk about one nominee for Best Picture here from the current 2025 Oscars that are going to be dropping or going to be screening on March 2nd. And of course, we're doing this to prepare ourselves for our March 1st live show of the first ever Cinephiles Award show based on the Oscars nominations that are there. If you are a member of the, if you're a listener to us and you haven't joined the Patreon, you can join the Patreon on the free tier or the paid tier and vote. All votes count. All votes matter. So, but you have to join the Patreon first at patreon.com/thecinephiles. I am John Rocha Jones, as always, by my great co-host here, Steve Morris. And Steve, today we are talking about The Brutalist. A, how are you? And B, what are your thoughts about this movie? Right off the bat.
First of all, I'm really good. I'm very, very excited about our upcoming Cinephiles Award show, the first annual, and I hope the first of many. It's exciting to sort of be overseeing our own little version of the Oscars. I think it's fun. And I'll tell you something, the votes have been pouring in. So definitely, if you want your voice heard, just go to patreon.com/thecinephiles and you can fill out that ballot and vote. The Brutalist. It's funny. The first film I think we did was A Complete Unknown, where I said there's this difference between what is necessarily the best picture and what is my favorite picture. Those aren't necessarily the same things. And at that moment, I felt A Complete Unknown was my favorite picture. I will say about The Brutalist, it is absolutely 100% not my favorite picture.
Wow.
I'm not saying it's not the best picture.
Okay.
But I did not love it and enjoy it. I wasn't tapping my toes the way I was while watching A Complete Unknown. I did not find it to be a fun movie to watch. It is a powerful movie and an impressive movie. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I have to say, I think this is what would normally be tailor-made as the winner of a Best Picture at the Oscars, except this year has been such a or this campaign season has been such a wonky season that it seems, as we're recording this right now, that Anora has now kind of gripped the momentum, possibly because of the AI accusations, which we will have a short on that coming up soon, as related to the Oscar movies and beyond. Possibly because the film is 3 hours and 40 minutes long and not everybody enjoyed it. Obviously the Emilia Perez drama that has kind of pushed that one aside. And Wicked, I think of people that were just happy that Wicked got nominated and there are not enough. It doesn't seem like there's not enough momentum for that film to get over the line for any number of reasons. That being said, I still believe that The Brutalist is going to win, although I will not be surprised if Anora wins. But overall, I think this film is an incredible film. As a cinephile, this is a film that really tests you and tasks you, as Khan might say, when you're watching the film, because it is not going at a breakneck pace. It is, even though the score feels like it's moving you in that direction. If you're not into architecture, this can be a little bit of a difficult film to kind of really invest in, but it's the performances that keep you watching the film here throughout as it lays out this, as from the poster, as you see, the upside down Statue of Liberty, this really messed up immigrant story who becomes successful in America, but has to endure so many things in order to achieve that success. So it takes that normal cliche story of an immigrant making good in America, turns it on its head like that Statue of Liberty and leaves you feeling, I don't know, just exhausted and emotionally drenched from a film like this because of what Adrian Brody's character experiences throughout the whole film. And I think him and Guy Pearce are the two main reasons to see this movie. Brady Corbett's direction, I think, is incredibly gutsy. And Felicity Jones is fantastic in the film as well. So no surprise she got nominated. But this is a film that puts you through the ringer. And by the end of it, you're like just exhausted walking out of the theater, you know?
Well, it's 3 hours and 40 minutes long. It is exhausting.
Yeah, I don't feel that way coming out of Lawrence. And I think that's the difference.
Well, and I think this is the thing is that Lawrence, you know, an equally long movie is a movie Look, it's arguably my favorite film. It's one of the greatest movies of all time. It is funny and thrilling and exciting and deep and meaningful and beautiful and all those things.
Yeah.
This movie is much more difficult. It's much harder to get my head around.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take you in a direction that is predictable.
Yeah.
And I don't think it leaves you in a place. And these are none of this is a criticism.
Right.
These are just how I felt with the movie. I don't think it leaves you going, oh, I get what this is about. It leaves you going, how do I reckon with what I've experienced? Like, what is it saying? What am I supposed to feel? I think, first of all, just right off the bat, I think Adrien Brody's performance is astounding.
Yeah.
Top to bottom, it is an absolutely incredible, gut-wrenching, difficult, unknowable, extremely human, not always likable, not always pleasant performance from the beginning to end. And I think, because what's so hard about the movie is that we start in the aftermath of unbelievable trauma.
Yeah.
Which is, these are Holocaust survivors,
yeah.
you know? And so the level of pain that we're dealing with or trying to move beyond is so huge. And you feel it right at the beginning. I mean, I was sobbing at the very beginning, just at the discovery, just at seeing the Statue of Liberty, that first glimpse of the Statue of Liberty is so powerful. And then in when he meets his cousin or whatever it is and discovers that his wife and niece are alive.
Yeah.
Like, I was sobbing. I mean, it's so powerful right from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think Adrien Brody, again, I think he's the front runner to win.
Yeah.
Unless there's the AI thing that maybe causes its issues. I don't know, but this is such an incredible performance.
Yeah.
And you're right. He's not an easily likable guy. He's abrasive. He's arrogant. He's disrespectful at times to his wife in behavior and speech. And finds himself in a complex situation with a rich man and goes toe-to-toe with him in a number of ways until that brutal scene in the second half of the movie. But what he delivers is a magnetic performance that challenges you as a viewer to go along with this person in what they're going into. And matching him just as powerfully is Guy Pearce, who we have not seen in quite some time deliver a performance like this. Guy is always good, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But the material is not always up to Guy's talent. And this material from Brady Corbett and Mona Fastbold is incredible to bring Guy Pearce to that level. And we watch these two guys as they circle each other. Neither one of them at times have positive characteristics, yet we can't take our eyes off this relationship and what it all leads to. And so, I agree with you. Both of these performances are just stunning in what they're taking you through. And then you add Felicity Jones, who comes in like, an hour and something into the movie. So
it's
not like she's there through the whole movie. She's there. She comes in an hour and something into the movie. And then what happens with her and the interactions that she has with Guy Pearce's son. I can't remember that actor's name, but he's really infuriating throughout the movie and purposefully so. And so there's so much here where you're not made to feel cuddly or happy or taken care of or inspired. You know, you're made to be like, look, this is what it was for some people who came over to this country. And this is what it's like dealing with the rich and the wealthy sometimes. You know,
I think it's such an incredible exploration of privilege because what happens is, we're trying not to spoil the whole movie, but you know, there is this once successful architect from Europe who was in a concentration camp and survived and is now in the United States. And there's a sense of, you want someone to discover the great artist. You want someone to discover the hero, to see the diamond in the rough. That's what, and at this moment, you know, Adrien Brody's character is a diamond in the rough. He's this genius. But he's working at a furniture store and he's doing this thing. And so we have this sense of, Guy Pearce's character is going to appreciate him.
Yeah.
He's going to save him. And in some levels he does.
Right.
And I mean, there's no question that Guy Pearce appreciates him, that he sees something special in this guy. That's totally true.
Yeah.
He also sees someone that he can use and someone that he is not, that he doesn't respect, that is not at his level, that is a, because he is wealthy and privileged.
Yes.
And he is, and we had to say too, the sense of his character is on some levels, he is a great man.
Yeah.
He has accomplished great things.
Yes.
And there's this weird thing of, and then his son is the next generation of privilege who hasn't even accomplished great things.
Yeah.
But it still has that aura around him of wealth and power. And so the exploration of that and how they treat each other, and then how Adrian Brody's character, Laszlo, has to negotiate his life within the context of this privileged person and go, well, in order to have what I want, I have to deal with this person who does appreciate me on some levels and is allowing me to do the thing that I want to do. But there's a big but in there about who he is and how he's treated.
You know? Yeah. And I have to expose the people I love to this person.
Yeah.
In order
and to his family and his world.
Exactly. In order to achieve the things that his ambition wants him to achieve, right? This is also a film that is very male driven in terms of the ambition that both of these men have in a patriarchal society in that at that time and what it can lead to and where it can go. And that's also a fascinating thing to explore, to get that accurate for the time. But I love that they don't turn Felicity into a wallflower. I think that's so essential for the film, because you have to feel that there are, that these are hard-edged people, and certainly surviving a Holocaust is just as, well, I don't want to compare, I guess you can't compare, but surviving a Holocaust will certainly create an edge to your approach to the world because of all you've endured and all you've seen and experienced, and that you survived. And then people who are fighting through the American business empire to achieve the things that they've achieved and some of the unsavory shit they have to do or some of the terrible stuff that they have to endure themselves in order to achieve this level of success. It creates a hardness. I'm not comparing the two equally. I'm just saying there is a hardness. And so all of these people, except for the son, who's just a dick, have a hardness to them. Yeah. An earned hardness, right? The son is just a dick because he's a privileged and he's soft and he's riding his dad's coattails. But everyone else has this harder edge to them because of the earned hardness. And that's what kind of slams into each other as the film goes along. And especially in that second half, which isn't as good as the first half, which I think is fair to say, but like it's just as poignant to see the changes in those relationships as they get older.
Well, I think part of it is that people don't get past trauma. Like
you might
find ways to deal with trauma and you might, you know, but like when his wife shows up, there's still people that survive the Holocaust and they're dealing with trauma in their current lives. I mean, there's things going on in their current lives that are super difficult that they're trying to survive. And it's funny because I really feel like this is a movie that I'll probably watch again several times over the next 20 years, and I will, and my feelings will evolve over it. I don't really feel like this was a movie that I could go, as I said, I don't get it. I don't go, at the end of Lawrence of Arabia, I know what I'm feeling, you know? And it's not that there's not ambiguity to that. Same with Citizen Kane. The end of Citizen Kane, I know what the movie has directed me to feel. Whereas this is like, I got to the end and I went, okay. Okay. Like this, and it's interesting too with the, you know, as a Jewish person who's known new Holocaust survivors as a kid and as a child of Jewish immigrants who came a generation and a half earlier, my family all came before the turn of the century, basically, but still the same sort of trying to make your way. And I know the stories. One of the stories of the legends of my family is that they showed up on Ellis Island, they only spoke Yiddish, and got a job selling pots and pans. And so they were going door to door with a satchel of pots and pans and went up to a kid because they went, I wonder if I could sell outside of the Yiddish neighborhood. Yeah. So he went to some kids and said, how do you say pots and pans? I'm selling pots and pans in English. And they said, you're killing dogs and cats. Oh. And so he walked into some other neighborhood with Americans and said, I'm killing dogs and cats in the bag. and he was beaten up and run out of the neighborhood.
Jesus.
You know, now I don't know if that's true, but, or you know what I mean? But it's like the immigrant story of coming to this country and trying to make your way. I mean, this is a universal story and it's super, I mean, you're obviously, you can speak to it much more recently than I can.
Oh, right. Yeah. My dad. Yeah. Right. Yeah. My dad being an immigrant, my mom being immigrant to this country, both legal before anybody wants to run off to the, you know, and they did what they had to do to survive, you know, and look, my dad was an old school dude and he wanted to provide for the family, but my dad had no discernible skills when he came to this country other than working on telephone wire, which he had done in Argentina for years. So when he came to this country, he had tried a bunch of jobs, working nursing homes, these kinds of things. And he taught himself to become a house painter. He knew he had to survive. So he would learn how to house paint. And then he would go door to door to people's houses, driving around the neighborhood to say, hey, I want to paint your house. And sometimes he wouldn't charge them because he was learning on the fly how to paint the house. And they would let him paint houses in that way. So he got really good at it and started his business. And that's how he did it. My mom, violating my father's edict, learned how to drive, got her own job, much to my father's chagrin, and became a hairdresser from scratch. You know, so both of them eking out a living, but having to overcome stuff not only outside of the house, but within the house as well in order to achieve their own success to a degree. So yeah, this is the thing that you have. And I mean, it's no surprise that I run my own YouTube channel, have my own, like, this is, I've never been happier because I come from people that don't want to be told what to do and want to live their life on their terms, on their hours. And so I see that and I appreciate that. And watching the movie, because I've seen the dark side of the immigrant story with the stuff that my parents went through, their accents being made fun of, their look and clothes being made fun of because we didn't have a lot of money. Made to feel lesser than or irrelevant or othered and in those ways for many years. And I even had people try to gaslight me who I knew in high school who tried to claim that none of that ever happened in our town. I remember that being a really weird situation at a high school reunion years ago with a few of the people who had seen some of my Facebook posts who were like, I don't know what you're talking about. There was never any racism. And I was like, you're insane. You have no idea what you're talking about. You know, you're not from an immigrant family. You had no idea what we endured in these small micro and macro ways. So, yeah.
It's funny. There are a bunch of parallels between your story and what happens in the movie because you have this guy who comes to this country, can't work in the profession that he does. He's living in a fucking closet, you know, designing furniture, you know, trying to get towards something. And then when his wife shows up, she takes control of her own life and gets her own work, just like your mom did.
Yeah.
And there's conflict within the family between the two of them.
Yeah.
You know, there's and man, all of the I mean, you've heard these are the things that fucking piss me off. When someone who speaks multiple languages mispronounces words in your language and you who speak only one language make fun of them, that is fucking ridiculous. You only speak one language. They might speak six. Like when someone who has no money and their clothes are shitty or they haven't been taught that this is the clothes we wear in America versus the clothes where you came from and you make fun of them, it's like, well, you're a fucking asshole. Yeah. Like all of these things where people, I mean, this is all the elements of privilege is that you don't realize how hard it was for that person to get to this place.
Right.
You know, right. I mean, what's interesting, it would have been, I'm not saying that it's not a criticism.
Right.
Laszlo is a difficult character.
Yes.
If it had been a more heroic character, we could have just been like, we're with this guy, but the movie doesn't let you sit there just with him. I mean, there are times like at the beginning, there's something that happens with his family and the cousin's new wife that is like, oh, that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah.
Like really upsetting. But then you go like, but then he's, you know, he's a heroin addict and he is, you know, not always very nice to a lot of the people around him. He's a difficult guy to be around, but artists are difficult people and he is a true artist. And it is funny because, and this is where I relate to it, not an immigrant, obviously, but there have been times where there are powerful people who I thought were going to give me a chance to do my work.
Yeah.
And so I was in their orbit at their parties, doing their things, and I didn't necessarily like everything that I saw, but I'm like, hey, man, you got to just endure this.
Yeah.
In order to get a movie made. That's what's, you know, and I'm sure you've been in that. I know you've been in that room too, dealing with powerful people who, I'm not saying that you kiss their ass or I kiss their ass. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's our nature, but like, those are the people that have the keys that allow us to do the shit that we want to do.
Oh, you know? God. Yes, of course. And I've talked about it before. I don't want to get into too much of it, but certainly working for someone who owns the company that you work for, and you are constantly being brought into the office and being asked, are you spying on your fellow coworkers? Tell me what's really going on, and having your job essentially threatened consistently was a horrible way to exist in a job that you're trying to learn. But you know what? You deal with it. People making fun of you wanting to be on every video because you want to learn to get better at your job. This is the crap I had to endure in order to come out the other side feeling comfortable enough to start my own channel. So yeah, I'm in no way comparing it to the Holocaust or anything what people endured, but we all have our paths that we walk once we choose the things that we want to do. And we will, and there's a certain amount of shit that you have to eat sometimes, depending on who you are as a person, in order to achieve those things, and depending on who the people you work with are. I mean, I could have easily gone to a completely different company with a better owner, better set of people, and a better situation where they wanted to teach me all this kind of stuff. It was not that situation that I experienced there at that outlet that I was working at. It was not. It was a constantly toxic, dysfunctional, jealous undercurrent of anger throughout the whole time I was there, but I did it anyway because fuck them, you know? And so that's kind of the situation and how you're built and how much you're willing to endure. And you see Laszlo, like Laszlo endures a lot, even though he also doles out a lot of negative behavior towards people. He also endures a lot trying to find his place in the country. And I think that was what made the film so interestingly unique for me, and one that I enjoyed watching. And I've seen it twice now that I've enjoyed watching, because it's just kind of a fascinating thing with being the son of immigrants to watch this story being played in a way that isn't all cuddly, you know?
John, did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? I mean, it's not just about your birthday. Your body could be a little bit older, could be a little bit younger than what you think. And that's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age. Plus, get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part, it's all done from the comfort of your home. No prescriptions, no lab visits. It's just a simple test sent right to your door.
Yeah, Steve, that's why I was so excited when True Diagnostics said they wanted to come on and sponsor us here on The Cinephiles. You know, you and me both talk about our health, and certainly people listening to us, they're very aware of their health as they get a little bit older, and you want to kind of stop things from coming or be more aware of what might be coming. And True Diagnostic has a thing called True Age Test. And in that True Age Test, you can find out so much about the age of your body, which helps you. So I was very excited when I got my True Age Test recently from True Diagnostic.
And the cool part is, this is not guesswork. The True Age Test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working at Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I mean, this is real science that you can trust. So think about what it would be like to know exactly how your lifestyle is impacting your body. True Diagnostic makes it easy to get started, offering simple, actionable insights that you can use right away. This is your chance to take control of your health and get the bigger picture. Don't leave it to chance. True Diagnostic helps you understand not just where you're at now, but where you're headed.
All great points, Steve. All right, Cinephiles fans, are you ready to find out your biological age? Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their entire order at TrueDiagnostic.com by using the code CINEPHILES at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic, TrueDiagnostic.com. Just use the code CINEPHILES to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
So this, here's one that happened to me, and I will totally fucking name names because honestly, this guy's been dead for many years, so it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
But a few years after film school in the early 2000s, I was working for Fred Weintraub.
Oh, yeah.
Fred Weintraub, owner of the Bitter End, which was a famous club in the heyday in New York.
Yeah.
He had Woody Allen. He had all these people. He was the producer of the Woodstock movie. He produced Enter the Dragon. He became a kind of a Hollywood muckety muck, and he was making low budget movies in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
I wrote a movie for him, which did get made, and which I'll mention in a minute. And then he said, "Hey, Steve, can you write? I want a movie about this and this and this. I'll pay you $500 to write me a 2-page idea." I went, "Great." Wrote him a 2-page idea. He said, Yeah, I don't really like this. Write me another one. And I wrote him another one. And I said, but you're going to pay me $500. He said, yeah. And I wrote him another one. He said, write me another one. So I wrote three. Now I've written three. Wow. And he said, and I said, and he says, and I say, okay, so are you going to pay me? And he said, no, because I didn't like them. And I said, wow. You didn't say that you were going to pay me if you liked them. You said, I will pay you $500 to write this thing. I've now written three. And I said, and I wrote to his partner. I wrote to the accounts person. I'm like, am I getting paid? And they're like, yeah, I don't think so. Wow. And I finally went to him. And actually, you know, I hadn't actually talked to him about getting paid until several months had gone by. I finally go to him and I said, hey, you said you're going to pay me. And he said, I'll tell you what, you have two choices. Either you shut the fuck up and never say anything about this again and you can keep working here, or I'll write you a check for $500 right now and you walk out of the office and never come back. And I stood there for a while and I said, write me a check. And he wrote me a check.
Yeah.
And he wrote me the check for $500 and I walked out of the office and I never came back. But then the movie I wrote came out and my name was taken off of it that I had written. Now, it wasn't union and the movie is fucking terrible. Anyone who wants to find it, it's called Dream Warrior, starring Daniel Goddard and Lance Hendrickson and Isaac Hayes. And it is a low-budget action movie. It does exist. I did fucking write that movie. And my name was taken off of it.
Wow.
But I was sitting there with this person who could make my career, because the next thing that was going to happen was he was going to let me direct a movie. That was where I was going next.
Oh, yeah.
And I made the choice of going, no, you have to treat me with respect. And I'm still filled with a bit of regret. Man, what if I hadn't stood up to him? Maybe I could have directed a movie.
Yeah.
You know?
There is this thing that people feel like, and I know we're kind of maybe sliding a little bit away from the movie, but there is this thing that people feel like they have to put other people through their paces in order to validate helping them, in order to see if they really want to achieve the things that they, because look, it happened to me. I should be able to do it to you. How some people feel like, hey, work for free, give me extra hours, and they dangle the carrot of advancement in order for you to commit yourself. But if something comes along and they got to fire you, they will fire you at a moment's notice. And so you see that. And certainly in the film, I think at times Guy Pearce's character wants to put Laszlo through these paces at times to test him, but also like strokes his hair at the same time in different ways, right? He's both complimentary and horrific to him throughout the movie, depending on his whims and his desires.
That's what you do with a pet.
Yes.
That's what you do with someone who is not quite a human.
Right.
And that's the treatment, is that it's not that you don't love your pet.
Yeah.
But they are inferior to you.
Yes.
And that is how he feels about that. That's what is so fucking upsetting to me in watching the movie, is that he appreciates him more than almost anyone else in the film.
Yeah.
He sees that the guy's a genius, but he's still lesser than. And whether he's lesser than because he's not an American, whether he's lesser than because he's a Jew, whether he's lesser than because he has an accent or has gone through trauma, or whatever it is, or doesn't dress right, or is culturally, doesn't matter. It allows him to go, I am the wealthy, powerful American, and you will never, ever be at my level.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't even think that you can be.
Yeah. You can't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what's so, and it just, that, and I guess, again, this is why I go, this is not my favorite movie. I don't find this fun, because I was angry for a good hunk of I was between uncomfortable and angry a lot of the time. And that's hard. And it's 3 hours and 40 minutes of feeling upset. Not that it's not well made. It's beautifully made and beautifully acted. But man, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And but that's the thing. And I get what Brady was trying to say in the message of the movie. And I think we both get it, right? Obviously, it's that this thing like, and then in a way, it's a commentary as well of people in this country hating immigrants, right? Because this guy is coming in and wants to achieve success. He has a talent that this rich guy doesn't have. And this rich guy has done what he's done to achieve his success and what have you. But like the fact that this immigrant would think that he could ever possibly be on the level of someone who has been here as a multi-generational American is insulting to him. And so again, it's a commentary that we see playing out right in our streets today of people who want all immigrants to be thrown out of the country and what have you, and look down on immigrants who come into this country, who do anything. Like, the madness that an immigrant comes over here and commits assault or a rape or a murder, but people who are born here who commit assault and a rape and a murder seems to be more okay than someone who's come over. Like, that's a maddening philosophy in my head that makes it's crazy. No sense. No.
As opposed to going, you've committed rape. That is a crime.
Yes.
We will treat that crime. Well, and because the bigger thing, it isn't just that it's treated as worse, although it is.
Yeah.
It's that paints a picture over all immigrants. Yes. When the person who is the natural born American commits the same crime, it doesn't have any effect on me.
Yeah.
You know, like because the reason is because you can't take things that an individual does and apply them to the group. That is a basic rule that we should have learned a long fucking time ago.
Yeah.
It's like, and we also haven't learned the rule that all groups of humans are going to have assholes in them.
Yes.
It doesn't matter which group. You take the group, I mean, whether it's a group of priests or a group of Sunday school teachers or a group of singers or a group of drummers or a group of, it doesn't matter. You take a large enough group, there will be some assholes there.
Yes.
That's reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't say anything about the group.
100%. We should wrap up.
We've gone a long distance on this one. Sorry, everyone.
But real quick, before we wrap, what are your thoughts, Steve, as a director, what Brady Corbett was able to do here as a director in this? I mean, this is a young director getting the leeway to direct a 3-hour and 40-minute movie and an epic here. What were your thoughts of him as a director? And of course, recently interviewed by Mark Maron, who we just had Brendan McDonald, who's the producer on that show, on our show from Mad Max Fury Road. And Brady Corbett said he's gone broke from directing the movie. Like, he had to take a job directing commercials in Portugal or someplace in order to still have money in his bank account to go through these Oscar press tours. So what are your thoughts on him as a director and what he's enduring here now?
So first of all, that's ridiculous and crazy and sad.
Yeah.
I have one number to put out of what I think of him as a director, and that is $9.6 million. That is the budget of this film.
Yeah.
$9.6 million to make a 3-hour and 40-minute epic shot on VistaVision, which is a very old style.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the same as 70 millimeter. It's shot on film. That, just to say I made a 3-hour and 40-minute movie shot on VistaVision for $3 million or 9.6, that's an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah.
And then you go, okay, and it's a really good movie and it's visually stunning and the score is incredible and the performances are fantastic and is thought-provoking and difficult and moving. Mm. The guy did an incredible job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I think.
I thought so too. I mean, a young up-and-coming filmmaker having the stones to direct a film of this length and take us through this journey and just the way he shot this thing, the cinematography, the looks, the angles, the costuming, all of it. Because as a director, Steve, like, you have to have your opinions on all this stuff, especially with a film of this size. You want it to have that authenticity. Clearly, you're driven by a vision, and so you want it to look a certain way and lead to something. Because essentially, a film is almost like a piece of architecture. Everything has to fit perfectly in order to achieve the overall vision of what you want the film to be. And so in a way, he's kind of like Laszlo in that way as an architect. And what he constructs here as a director is something to be absolutely lauded. And it does frustrate me that this AI conversation, which is really such a small, 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 minuscule part of the movie, is being used to create a massive backlash towards the film that is completely unearned. And it is obscuring what I think is one of the most amazing films that we've had in the last 30 years. In our world. So
it is. I mean, we have a cinephile short about this AI issue, and the summary of it is, this is stupid.
Yeah.
This is like, that has nothing to do with the movie. You can, whatever. That is not, if there's any voters out there, either for the Academy or for the Cinephiles Awards, I strongly urge you to not have the AI affect whether or not you vote for this film.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah.
I'll tell you the Oscar I cannot give.
Okay.
cannot give an Oscar to best editing for this film. I was very much raised in the school of if you can cut it, you should. My personal aesthetic is I want things to move quickly, and I could have made this movie shorter and you would have missed nothing. So no best editing Academy Award. It does not get my vote.
I think it has a chance to win everything. Best picture, best actor, best, well, then maybe not best supporting actor. I don't think Felicity will definitely take it. I wish Guy Pearce would take best supporting actor, but people seem to be in love with what Kieran Culkin is doing, even though it's completely what he already did in Succession. Best director, I think it's I don't think he's going to win, but I think he should be considered a possible winner in this one. Best original score, I love this score. This score and the Conclave score are the two scores, right?
Yeah.
And then best original screenplay, I think, has a real shot. To production design, a real shot. Cinematography, a real shot. But I'll defer to you on editing on that. So I will say no on that with you.
As I said many times, we don't know what he started with. This might be the most brilliant editing in the history of the world, except for the fact that I could cut this shit down. but that's me. I mean, like, this is where you get to my personal aesthetic.
Right.
I want things to move. That's how I think of things. It's like, I don't like to slow down. I want to keep things going. Yeah. That's my style.
Absolutely. You know? Even though we spent 35 minutes on this one.
It doesn't apply to my talk.
Oh, right. Of course.
Except I am sure that I will cut this conversation down a little bit when I edit it.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. So that's our conversation on The Brutalist, our overall thoughts on it, getting into some specifics, but certainly trying not to spoil it too much for those of you who may not have seen it yet. This is one of the continuing series that we have here with this Oscar series. We've talked Anora, we've talked Wicked, we've talked Conclave, quite a few films, and there's more films coming that we'll be talking about as well here on this series, that every best picture that was nominated will get discussed and have its own episode. So keep looking out for these episodes as they drop throughout the time here. So for my partner, Steve Morris, I am John Rocha, and we'll talk to you next time. We should remind you, if you haven't signed up for the Patreon, sign up even as a free member. You can sign up to the Patreon and get a chance to vote on these awards that will be live on March 1st. And we've already locked down some really special guests. So it is going to be a fun little live show for sure for us overall, Steve. Yes?
I 100% agree. I am looking forward to presenting our own award show. Yeah, it'll be fun.
It will not be 3 hours and 40 minutes, we promise.
Nope.
All right, take care, everybody. We'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode of our Oscar series here on The Cinephiles.